Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the show. Our email address, indianaweekend@gmail.com. I'm John Strauss. Thanks for tuning in today. Summer is a great time for family reunions, and this is a special summer for an Indiana man who's been gone quite a bit in recent years. Lieutenant Colonel David Vesper joined the Indiana Army National Guard as a private 28 years ago. In civilian life, he's a physics teacher and administrator at University High School in Carmel, but he's been deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq 3 of the past 8 years. He's back this summer with his family and students, answering questions about what it's like to do what he does. He makes it all sound pretty routine at first.
2 tours in Afghanistan and 1 tour in Iraq. In 2004-2005, when I was in Afghanistan for a year, where I was embedded in the Afghan Army, helped train them, patrol with them during the initial Afghan elections. Then in 2008, I was in Iraq, where I commanded a base in northern Iraq, and then was also a battalion commander where my units did convoy security around northern Iraq. And then in 2012, I was in Afghanistan again, and I was a brigade executive officer, so helping manage staff for a unit that was managing all the coalition presence in a province. And then I also got to mentor then the chief of police for a couple months of the province I was in.
You've had a busy last, it's coming up on almost 10 years now.
Oh, yeah. In fact, one of my children's reminded me I've actually been gone 3 of the last 9 years deployed, 3 of the last 8, really. And so that is, and even between those, of course, been quite busy. So, yes, it's been busy for a lot of guardsmen.
People must ask you from time to time, what's that like? What an impossible question to answer. But when you try, what do you say?
There's a lot of things to it. It is new experiences. So I have my civilian career, a lot of interesting things with that, people I like. And then in the military, a whole other set of people, some overlap, obviously, but and other experiences. And for somebody that enjoys learning new things and enjoys having new challenges, it's a lot interesting. It's also a lot of it can also be very tiring on my family, tiring on me just with the deployment cycles and a lot of the energy the military can take quite a bit.
So when you first went 2004 in Afghanistan, would that at that point have been a civil affairs kind of thing? I mean, we at that point had driven the Taliban out, right?
Yeah, at that point the Taliban as a political force wasn't controlling any more territory, but you still had a country that was fundamentally fragmented. So there was no central government in Kabul, and what we were there for was to be embedded in the new Afghan army. So a new central army working for the central government, and in my case, we were patrolling in eastern Afghanistan. So we had a battalion of Afghans that we were worked with, and we both helped them with training and standards and also served as liaisons between them and coalition forces. So we would patrol jointly with U.S. Marines, for instance, at times, and would coordinate with the other U.S. forces, and that was our role. And then we'd also, again, work with the Afghans, help them get to move beyond a militia-type force or a guys that used to work for warlords to a force that is providing security for the people on behalf of a central government.
I'm remembering, was there a phrase from that time, we're going to help them stand up until we can stand down?
Yeah, that phrase has been used there, and it was also used in Iraq, I think, quite a bit later, the idea that anytime you're fighting an insurgency, ideally local security forces build up. And for both Iraq and Afghanistan, the long-term goal is for Iraq and Afghanistan to be sovereign, independent, ideally trade partners of the U.S. That's what we really want.
Well, in Afghanistan, often the loyalty of people is to their tribal affiliations first, right? So how did that play out as you're there, in effect, trying to build a professional force from something that didn't exist before?
Yeah, it was a transition, especially in 2004-2005, because there was not yet a technical government, an autonomous government. President Karzai had not been elected. That happened while we were there. But I remember the first time one of the first times we were patrolling with a battalion, we went to a local militia compound where we knew some weapons were being stored to be turned in on behalf of the UN. And the local militia there drew all their weapons and said, "Who are you guys?" And we're like, "Hey, we're the Afghan National Army." And it's like, "What are you talking about? There is no Afghan National Army." And had to explain that, no, we're from Kabul and this is actually your government. And then people 2 months later were quite happy to see us waving and, you know, moving us through. But initially, they had no idea that their central government was pushing out. It was just the next basically set of armed people coming through the area from their point of view.
Paint us a picture what it's like to go into these regions. Walk us through some of your early experiences there.
Sure. I think the most interesting thing about Afghanistan when we got there is all the contrast. So you fly into Kabul, and it is a city that on the one hand has some buildings that look something like something you'd see in downtown Indianapolis, a four-story office building with mirrored exterior stuff. A couple blocks down, you have a couple rubbled buildings made out of mud with bamboo. And then you go out and patrol in the east where we were, and quite literally, you can see a village where people are threshing wheat by hand. They're flinging wheat up in the air and watching the wind blow the chaff off of it. That's their entire economy. And then maybe one house in the village has a little generator so they can watch some Indian dance movies. Indian dance. Everyone loves Indian dance movies.
Bollywood is big there.
Yes, Everyone likes that. This was on the border with Pakistan. We were. And then toward the end of our time, all of a sudden they have a TV station. The Jalalabad got a TV station where we were. So now you've got a TV station. But you've still got people that are living this very agrarian society, mainly illiterate, and have not been much beyond their village. Where we worked, if you imagine where Kabul is, there's a main trade route through Jalalabad into Pakistan. That is Highway 1. It's basically a dirt road, but it is the main trade route for a country. And even 10 or 15 kilometers off that road, you may go into a village, and we're talking to people, and some of the Afghan soldiers we were with, who by Afghan standards are fairly cosmopolitan, they'd be talking to the locals, and they'd ask, hey, can we get where's a roadside stand? We can get some Pepsis, because everyone loves Pepsi. And there was none. In fact, the villagers had never heard of Pepsi. They didn't know what this thing was. But 10 kilometers away, there's a major trade route and a little booth set up with people trading. And you have roadside stands of Pepsis. But the people in that village had never got far enough away from their village to have a clue what the rest of the country was like.
He's known as Mr. Vesper around the halls of University High School in Carmel. To his fellow soldiers, though, he's Lieutenant Colonel Vesper, with a story of service that stands as a reminder of the 10 years the U.S. has been at war in Afghanistan and Iraq. When we come back, Dave Vesper as de facto mayor of a town of 10,000 in Iraq.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line, let us know what you think, at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
Today, the story of a teacher soldier. The United States has been in Afghanistan since October 2001. U.S. forces invaded Iraq in 2003. Among those who've been to both countries with the U.S. Army, serving 3 of the last 8 years, is Lieutenant Colonel David Vesper of the Indiana National Guard. His civilian job is teaching physics at University High School in Carmel, where he's also an administrator. In 2005 and last year, he was in Afghanistan. In 2008, he was in Iraq, commanding a base in northern Iraq.
Iraq, I was there in 2008. I don't know as much about the Iraq population because on that rotation I was mainly on a base, so my main job was supporting the coalition forces. But I did work with Iraqis, and I know for the forces that I supported, what they saw at that point, there was still fighting going on in Mosul. That's where we were in the northern part of the country. But most of the country was getting settled, and in particular for where we were, a big project was opening up an airfield. So it was a civilian Iraqi airfield and 737s flying in and out, carrying civilians in and out of Mosul. So there was enough growth to where that was normal. There was still fighting going on. You know, rockets were being shot at our base, but you'd look over, and okay, there's the 737 with the passengers getting off. So it was.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, yeah.
What was your base doing in Iraq?
Center base, we just housed about 10,000 people, which was mainly the coalition forces that were patrolling around in the northern parts of Iraq, as well as some U.S. diplomatic folk who were helping to build capacity with the Iraqi government.
So you're like the mayor of this very
exactly.
busy town, right?
Exactly.
What kinds
yeah.
of things did you have to figure out there?
There was a variety of things. Some things were fun in many ways. We had things like, you imagine we've poured all our resources to Iraq. We're running a base, and then you have air conditioning units that are failing. Well, now we've got to ship them back to the U.S. or ship them away. What we found is a program where there were repairmen, Iraqi repairmen, who had worked on them. And so we negotiated out, working with some NGOs, where we ended up giving them to locals who could repair them, refurbish them, and give them to Iraqi police stations so they would have air conditioning. So finding those connections amongst a lot of disparate units and a lot of disparate needs was fun at times. Also had to do, I think, what some level is mayor-type stuff on, the ice plant broke. Okay, we have no ice for 24 hours. Let's get a new part in, trying to get parts in to fix the ice real quick, or shipping water from one part to the other, or even simple things like it's raining a whole lot. In Iraq, with the weather, it didn't rain for 6 months. Now it rains all of a sudden, and, hey, half the roofs have leaks because we haven't bothered to repair them for 6 months because it didn't rain. So go repair them real quick.
I'm trying to imagine what a to-do list looks like. Mm-hmm. In a job like that.
Yeah, what worked out well for me there is having a good staff, of course, to help prioritize that, and a good contractors that worked for us. Sometimes contractors get a bad rap, sometimes justifiably so, but in this case, the civilian contractors we had that did a lot of the stuff the Army isn't necessarily skilled at, of managing a base, running ice plants, all were quite competent.
The people in these places, did you get much contact?
Some with Kurds. Quite a bit, who were also our region, had some Kurdish forces, and we talked with them a bit. And that was interesting, partially for things, simple things like we're watching Iraqi television one day, and a TV show comes on, and it's a Kuwaiti show that had been made about Saddam Hussein. And it's Saddam Hussein is this bumbling, overweight guy yelling out random orders and people doing, it's a slapstick comedy is what it was. And it was funny seeing that in Iraq and also seeing the Iraqis' reactions to it. They all thought it was hilarious and would then go in a lot of jokes about Saddam Hussein.
Well, I imagine the Kurds didn't remember him fondly.
No, not at all. These were Kurds I was mainly with. They were quite happy to see him as a bumbling fool.
How about the Afghani folks that you met?
Yeah, it was especially on the first tour. I again, lived with Afghans quite a bit and had enjoyed that very much. A lot of things stood out, partially what we talked about earlier. If you think about what it would be like to live in a society where it's fundamentally lawless for 20 years or so and to see how they handle themselves, a lot of things that seemed odd were quite justifiable. A gun culture, people having weapons all the time. Even simple things like going to a school to visit and, hey, people love pencils and you hand them out. Then you look behind the school and there's this 30 by 30 foot area where it's just stacked full of old mortar rounds because somebody collected up and stored them there. And everyone's just going around them doing their daily job, but this is what's laying there. So we'd clean up that stuff and help them dispose of it. But the people thought that was very normal and they thought that they had an ideal, especially the educated ones, had an ideal for what they wanted in a nation in terms of security, in terms of stability, but had some very practical considerations about where they were and what really requirements were for every individual to feel safe enough and feel confident enough in a government to have what we think of as a nice, stable, secure society.
What did you see over time between your first visit and then when you returned? Was there signs of progress, hopeful?
Oh, definitely. It was 7 years and on even the purely military side, the Afghan Army, when I was there early on, we had really one battalion of about 800 soldiers patrolling around four provinces. When we went back 7 years later, there were a couple thousand Afghans patrolling just one province. They were much more self-sufficient. The police we worked with were patrolling and pretty self-sufficient. And there was a lot of signs of construction and stability, decent bridges, schools running, not an ideal, not a first world nation by any means, and certainly a lot of corruption in the government that was still they were working through, but a reasonably functioning society with a certain level of security.
Indiana National Guard Lieutenant Colonel David Vesper, also known simply as Mr. Vesper, physics teacher and assistant principal at University High School in Carmel. When we come back, you go from being a high school physics teacher to dodging IEDs in a war zone. Then you're back home again. What that's like. We're talking today with Dave Vesper, a high school physics teacher north of Indianapolis who's been deployed 3 times to Afghanistan and Iraq with the Indiana National Guard. He wasn't always in heavy combat, but it's a war zone, something you don't forget, even when you get back home.
Sure, there's certainly a level of alertness that comes with that. I was fortunate enough to not have to be, did not get injured, but certainly saw things blowing up. And I know when my wife complained when I first got back, I'd be driving around 465. And to be honest, I didn't notice it so much, but I was changing lanes back and forth when there was stuff on the side of the road. It's just, and it's prudent. And whenever there's something on the side of the road, you would normally swing around it. But I was probably doing it a little more deliberately and a little quicker than what would be considered normal. So I think there's a normal tension, and a lot of soldiers, I think, feel that when they come back. Not tension, but tenseness and an alertness that takes some time to ramp back down.
Was there a time when something went off and you were nearby?
Certainly pretty normal in Iraq and Afghanistan. And normal can vary depending on where people are, to once a week to once a month to daily, I think, in some people, for some people's experience. And certainly, again, that sets you on edge. I know when I came back the first 4th of July, my wife would talk about she could see the tension in me as we were watching fireworks. And if I thought about it, yes, I was sitting up quite erect and feeling quite alert about the fireworks going off, even though I know perfectly well it's just fireworks going off.
Well, yeah, that cannot be a very pleasant experience.
Sure, but I think most people, that's a transition you go through, because when you are back here, every other indicator is you're back in the United States, and so it's something that I think most people go through whenever you shift environments. Well, it's graduating from a new school or moving to a new part of the United States, even, you always have associations with the old environment, and acclimating to the new is a transition.
We owe a big debt to the folks who came back and need some help. Tell me what goes through your mind as you think about that. I mean, we have decades of work to go.
Sure. I think the vast majority of soldiers who come back acclimate real well, go back to their families and their jobs. But there are the stressors there. And for some soldiers, that can be quite a burden. I think the thing I think about the most, which most people think about, I think, in the last 10 years, has been the economy has at times not been that good. Unemployment is a problem to begin with. And for returning soldiers, I think I saw in the paper just a couple of weeks ago, the unemployment rate for returning soldiers is about twice that of the population as a whole. So I know that continues to be a problem. And it's partially, I think, because some people join the military as a job option. You get deployed, then you come back after some training maybe a year later, and now you're looking for work. But it's unfortunate because, in my experience, I find the military has helped me be much better at my job, and my friends generally are quite competent and quite good, and we try and employ veterans whenever we can.
Well, you're a lieutenant colonel, yeah. So. But what is it like coming back to the classroom, to a school like this, after what you've been through?
Overall, it's really good. I get a lot of experiences that I can share in my classes. I normally teach physics and astronomy. That's my background. But since going to Afghanistan the first time, I've taught a couple classes on failed states, reconstruction, just based on all my experiences working with NGOs, working with the UN, working with the State Department, and interfacing with them while I was working with the Afghan army or the Afghan police. And that gave me a perspective on something that, when I was in school, I wasn't all that interested in, but now I have a lot of interest in, so I can teach about that. And I also can guest lecture in some of the history classes when they talk, or even the literature classes when they're reading Afghan literature.
I wondered, since Dave Vesper had had two tours in Afghanistan, the last one ending just last year, what progress he had seen in that time.
Yeah, certainly in the first deployment, when I was working with a battalion, there are two things that stood out. So I'm working with an Afghan battalion, and thinking back 3 months into it about when we first got there, and the locals are pulling out weapons when they see us because they don't recognize us. And then 3 months later, I'm doing a foot patrol through Jalalabad and having locals come up, and I'm chatting with them, and they're talking about how they're happy when they see the army because at that point they felt very comfortable when they were around. They knew there were still people with guns, there were still bad guys, but they were happy when an army people were nearby because they felt safe. That was a success. And when we just saw more trade going on, you'd see trucks going back, and then toward the end of our time there was a road was finally built. There was a bunch of international money to help build a main highway between Kabul and Jalalabad. And you see trade going back and forth. And, if trade is going, that means money is exchanging hands. There may be corruption. There may be, graft going on. But trade means new resources for people. And going back 7 years later, despite all the continued fighting, despite what is seen by a lot of setbacks, just going through the city, at that point I was based in Tarinkot, and going into a city and seeing almost all the roads are paved and being paved by Afghans in part, that there are people that are functioning. There are judges who are judging cases, for people that are in jail.
There's a rule of law, not just of warlords.
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, I'm an optimistic guy, but I think that has to be, you have to be prudent about what your expectations are. I think historically, insurgencies last around 10 years. That's normal. And if you look at a country like Afghanistan and the devastation, I think a reasonable expectation anytime in the near future is a perfectly normal, stable, poor third world nation. That is high success, and you know, with some level of security. And then if it ends up having a stronger economy down the road, if democracy flourishes, those are great and good, and we would hope those things happen. But the immediate goal, even 10 years down the road, is a secure, relatively poor third world nation when you think about what you're starting with.
Have we learned some important lessons in 10 years?
Oh, I think at the national level, there's a lot of lessons. Certainly the Army has put a lot of energy into the idea of counterinsurgency and doing a lot more training on that. There's just a lot more doctrine than there was 10 years ago on processing that, so a lot more familiarity. And I think, obviously, there's a lot more understanding of what type of commitment is required if we're going to do it, that it is not a short-term thing. It's not something to be done casually. It may be something that's very important to do. I'm sure it's something the U.S. will do again someday, but it is not a casual thing. And obviously, like any situation, if you can do something to mitigate it up front, then if you can, we can prop up a country early on, or if we can provide some kind of aid early on to a country and that puts it down a path of being stronger and stable early on instead of collapsing, that's always good.
Lieutenant Colonel David Vesper of the National Guard, a teacher in civilian life, back a few months ago from his third tour of duty in Afghanistan and Iraq, a total 3 years of service in the past 8 years. By the way, how many Americans do you think have been deployed to those two countries since 2001? About 2.5 million Americans have been in those wars. 400,000 have been deployed three or more times. Dave Vesper is one of those. He would tell you that others have sacrificed more. But that's what people like him always say. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. And if you'd like, consider sending us a short audio clip telling us what's on your mind, what's going on for the summer, your favorite vacation story, you know, things like that. Just use a smartphone or a digital recorder, speak your piece, and email the file to us at indianaweekend@gmail.com. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.
We went to a local militia compound, and the local militia there drew all their weapons and said, "Who are you guys?" And we're like, "Hey, we're the Afghan National Army." It's like, "What are you talking about? There is no Afghan National Army." 2 months later, we're quite happy to see us waving and, you know, moving us through. But initially, they had no idea that their central government was pushing out. It was just the, you know, the next basically set of armed people coming through the area from their point of view.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss of the Ball State Journalism Department. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Marcus Jackman. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture, Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.